Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, 3 hours of TPC can deprogram 3 years of your modern-day high school education in a flash. Welcome back to tonight's live broadcast. What a march around the world we're having. James Edwards, Keith Alexander now joining us. Thank you, Keith, for being, for all you do here at TPC. Obviously, you're a mainstay. You're an integral part of the success of this program. Are you enjoying the march around the world? And how about our guests tonight from Croatia and Scotland, respectively?
I've enjoyed them both. Can you hear me? I've got you on the speakerphone.
Yes, Keith is not in the studio tonight. We had to switch studios, and well, you don't need to bother yourself with all of the behind-the-scenes maneuvering, but Keith is joining us on the phone this evening. But yes, I hear you loud and clear, buddy.
That's great. Yeah, I've really enjoyed Sunak and Dawson. So, two top-rate guys, love their accents, and also love the information. And I really think that we've got Europe going in the same direction that America has been in for basically since the early frontier days, since the French and Indian War. We don't care whether you're Dutch, Croatian. We don't care if you're Sicilian, Spanish, Lithuanian, Norwegian, from the Faroe Islands, or whatever it is. If you're white, you are part of our tribe, and we welcome you in. And that's the outlook that we need to foster. We need to make sure that people understand that. People would like for us to divide along sub-ethnic and national lines, but that is not the path to success. We're going to have to join our forces, just like our ancestors had to join forces in order to defeat the Indians. We're going to have to do that to defeat today's equivalent of the Indians.
Well, you know, you're onto something there, buddy. We were talking about with Jim in the last hour about how our ancestors are Christian people throughout Europe, a pan-European Christian people had to come together to defend Europe from the Muslim horde. So too did our people here on this continent have to defend themselves against the attack of the savages here. And Jared Taylor, you know, we've talked about this before, but Jared Taylor has absolutely written a definitive argument defending our white pioneer settler people against the attacks of the American Indians. And you can read it at amren.com. We'll post it. We'll repost it to TPC next week. But talking about a pan-European people, that is our audience, Keith. And let me, again, folks, we don't appreciate one contribution more than the other. We don't. So when we read certain correspondence that's come in, don't think we're putting a favorite ahead of the rest. It's just, It's just what we find when we reach into the mailbag. But here is Steve in Pennsylvania. Thank you, James and Keith, for all your hard work. I usually donate $25 or $30 each quarter. I'm now going to up that each quarter. And so he did this particular quarter, Keith, in this our first quarter without payment processing online. Dear James and TPC, writes our listener, William in Georgia, please find and close a check to respond to your appeal in the current payment emergency. Thanks for all you do. Well, William, you've just been one of so many who have reached out and have sent contributions, the likes of which we have never seen before. Never before. It's been an unprecedented outpouring of support. Payment processing or not, this has been already only 20 days into the period, our greatest quarter ever. Ray writes to James and Keith and our TPC brethren, I have to admit that I haven't been contributing to the show on a regularly quarterly basis as I should. At times, my contributions have been irregular, but after listening to your show last week, I felt an urgent need to get this donation out to you as soon as I could. Best wishes. Well, Keith, I'm sure I speak for you as well when I thank Ray and, of course, Harold in Florida. Sorry to hear about your problems with the lousy bastards, but they're going to come after us all here if this helps. And he sent a contribution. We're all in this together, Keith. That's the point. Our audience gives us the ability to serve as their voice, our audience. And then, of course, we are united together across the country, around the world here at TPC Nation. But in a bigger and more noble cause, our well-being and health and survival around the world as a unique and distinct people of God's humanity. And we've represented that, I think, in grand fashion in this, our march around the world. And tonight, with stops in Croatia and Scotland, I don't think we could have given you two better representatives than Tom Sunick and Jim Dawson. But, Keith, we got to talk about stateside news this hour. And let's go quickly then to the trial of Derek Chauvin, of course, the officer involved in the George Floyd incident. I asked you at supper earlier this week, I said, is it normal, Keith, with your standing as an attorney, is it normal that a judge would introduce new charges during jury selection a full year after the alleged incident? And you answered me, what?
Definitely not. That's totally irregular. All of those matters are resolved before the jury is put in the box for a selection. This is what we're seeing now is that we have a, unlike China, which has a state-run media, we have a media-run state now, and it is getting down to the nitty-gritty of basically dictating what the courts do. The courts now are afraid to death of the media, afraid of taking an independent step that is not going to be endorsed by the media. So consequently, that's why this particular judge added, I think, a new charge of reckless homicide, like third-degree homicide or something, because they are desperate to hang this poor soul Derek Chauvin with something, anything, any type of prosecution. They're willing to sacrifice his liberty and, more importantly, the sanctity of the legal process just to make sure that they pacify the howling mobs that are not being disciplined, are not being having the laws enforced against them by the executive branch of the state government or the federal government. This is, well, what we're seeing now is a total turnaround from what we expect. And, you know, back during the civil rights movement with Brown versus Board of Education, for example.
Hold on right there, buddy boy. You've been around long enough to know what happens when the music starts. We stop, but we will continue right after this. We're covering only local, well, stateside American news this hour. Stay tuned.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Recent studies show that parents who smoke in the home are more likely to have children who smoke.
Yes, in fact, my brother, he's 22 now, he told me and my father that's why he started smoking. One of the reasons why he started smoking is because my dad was around, you know, and they saw my dad smoking. My dad said, okay, I don't want you to smoke. I don't want you to, you know, watch what I'm doing.
Recent studies also show that in homes where parents don't smoke, their children usually don't smoke either.
I am the way I am because my grandparents taught me what not to do. They gave me morals. They gave me belief. They gave me something to believe in. They just taught me well. I love them. I do.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I have a question. Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? I believe that great nations and great civilizations spring from a people who have a moral compass.
I don't think a civilization can long endure that does not have respect for all human life, born and not yet born.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
And I can certainly say that tonight about the guests, Jim Dosen and Tom Sunick. Also, one of our favorite guests, Pat Buchanan, who, without Pat, I would not be here. I wouldn't have joined his brigade. I wouldn't have worked for him. I wouldn't have run for office. I wouldn't have had a radio program. Pat has appeared on this show a handful of times, and he has defended us at every turn. When National Public Radio asked Pat about his appearance on the Political Cesspool, he defended us. Well, that's a rarity, that's for sure. Pat writes in his most recent column with regard to the George Floyd, Derek Chauvin incident, which Keith Alexander and yours truly are talking about right now here in this, our third and final hour. Pat writes, George Floyd was not choked to death. He was not asphyxiated. He was not killed by Chauvin's knee on the side of his neck. An autopsy showed Floyd's neck muscles were not even bruised. Floyd died when his heart stopped, yet he was already suffering from an enlarged heart with constricted arteries, one of five of which was 90% blocked, and two others were 75% blocked. An autopsy found heavy concentrations of fentanyl in Floyd's system and traces of methamphetamines. If Floyd had collapsed and died in the street while being arrested and wrestled into the squad car, his death would have been attributed to a drug overdose and bad heart, as it should have been. Moreover, there is testimony from those with Floyd when he was stopped for passing an allegedly phony $20 bill that he had passed out in the car before even the cops arrived, and that the arresting cops claimed he was foaming at the mouth even before being restrained. In short, Chauvin's defense attorneys will likely make a credible case, Pat writes, backed by evidence that Floyd's death was not caused by the knee to the neck, but by the battered condition of his heart, the near lethal dose of fentanyl in his system, and his anxiety and panic at being arrested and fearing, as he will, that he was going to be shot. In preparing for the trial, Chauvin, Minneapolis, has fortified with concrete barriers, fences, and razor wire the courthouse where it will be held. Understandably, for any acquittal of Chauvin or the conviction on a lesser charge than that of murder would trigger the riot that plagued those of the city throughout the summer of 2020. And if a mob does take to the streets of Minneapolis, as it did all of last summer, the national reaction will be telling. How does one accurately describe a crowd that gathers outside of a courthouse to demand, on the threat of riot, a verdict of guilty? So there Keith Pat tosses the gauntlet. So here you have, now we have heard all about these tourists who wandered into the Capitol, that being insurrectionists, terrorists, whatever. But you have here and now, outside of a federal courthouse, Black Lives Matter insurrectionists and anarchists setting up shop in the streets of Minneapolis, declaring city blocks to be an autonomous zone, theirs for the taking. What pressure does this put on a jury to deliver the verdict that the mob wants? I mean, can't justice be served in this case? Keith Alexander, attorney, Keith Alexander, Esquire, can justice be served in America? I was surprised that it was served in the case, and rightly so, of Michael, in the case of Michael Brown, in the case of George Zimmerman. Can it be served now?
Well, it can, but the question is, will it be? It was served, justice was served in the Rodney King trial, similar situation. In the Michael Brown trial, similar situation. But the left has just ramped up its intensive attack on white civilization and white institutions like the judicial system exponentially since Rodney King and Michael Brown, and the media is their main mouthpiece. The media, but what we need to do with so-called conservative whites is to wean them away from this false notion that somehow the civil rights movement was righteous and holy. It wasn't anything of the sort. It was a media production in every way. If the media, the national media, the national Jewish-owned media, which it was back in the 50s as it is today, had not gotten behind the black civil rights protesters, they wouldn't have, the whole production would never have amounted to a hill of beans. It was the first time in American history that the police were successfully portrayed as villains and the lawbreakers were successfully portrayed as heroes. That's what's going on now. The police, like Derek Chauvin, are villains. The lawbreakers, like George Floyd, are heroes. And I can tell you that mob outside the Hennepin County Courthouse that's going to be trying Derek Chauvin, if they come back with anything short of Derek Chauvin's head on a pipe like the Jacobin terror of Robespierre and St. Just back in the French Revolution, they're going to take to the streets. You know, the judge may think that he's buying peace by adding this third degree murder, reckless homicide count. That's not going to satisfy the howling mob that's been whipped into an inconsolable frenzy by the leftist media. They're going to go bananas. And as Pat Buchanan said, this man should get off. He didn't do anything wrong. Why do you think you have in places like Memphis all these white cops resigning from the force as soon as they've got their pension vested and then going to work for some suburban police department like Arlington, Tennessee, or Bartlett, Tennessee, or Collierville or whatnot, South Haven, Mississippi, whatever? They're doing it because they know that the odds are stacked against them. Look at what has happened. Look, for example, at just imagine what's happening now regarding the January 6th so-called insurrection in D.C. And by the way, there was a big article in Vanity Fair magazine about a private jet full of Memphis socialites that went up there that were Trump supporters. Vanity Fair is going to try to wreck them, ruin them, bankrupt them, because they decided they would exercise their First Amendment right to protest. They weren't even protesting. They just went up there, but they're trying to take them down. Look at that article in Vanity Fair. And this is what is happening. What if they had done that to the black protesters at Selma? What if they had had the FBI track every one of those people down, bring them back there to Selma, Alabama, try them, put them in jail for years? Do you think the civil rights movement would have been this resounding success that it was? No. Look, Selma was indicative of how the media's treated black protests, who they like. They like the blacks in Selma. Look what happened in the white civil rights movement at Charlottesville. They've basically gone out of their way to personally ruin everybody that was there at Charlottesville. They're doing the same thing for the so-called January the 6th, 2021 insurrection. They're going after these people. This is the media basically controlling our judicial system. The media tells you who gets prosecuted and what the penalty should be, and if you don't obey them, there's hell to pay. Like you said, the judge, no telling what would happen to him and his family. The jurors, if the jury verdict comes out like this, they're going to figure out who the people were that wouldn't vote for prosecution, and they're going after them. These people are going to have to be like Albert Johnson, the mad trapper in the old Charles Bronson movie Death Hunt. They're going to be tracking them down through the wilds of Canada trying to get them. This is a sad state of affairs, James.
Well, we'll see what happens. If justice is served, Derek Chauvin, and we don't know if he's a good guy or not, but we know he is not guilty of murder in this incident. If justice is served, he'll walk. If it's not, if the mob can put the pressure on the system.
It's good enough for me. Pat said that he's not.
We'll see. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The Biden administration is scrambling to find the capacity for the nearly 14,000 illegal immigrants in federal custody from the recent surge at the southern border. That includes more than 5,000 unaccompanied children in U.S. Customs and Border Protection custody. Senator Marsha Blackburn says numbers like that prove that the border situation is out of control. The Tennessee Republican tells Fox News that criminal elements are making the situation worse by taking advantage of the confusion.
You have international drug cartels, human trafficking, sex trafficking cartels. And where are they all coming to work? The northern part of Mexico, just south of the U.S. border. And for the drug and human and sex trafficking, this is out of control. So no, they do not have this border under control. And there are steps they need to take immediately to get it back under control.
This is USA Radio News.
For 3 years, you've heard me talk about MyPillow and the MyPillow Premium Pillow and how I get the best night's sleep of my life, how they don't go flat. They are washable and dryable and made in the USA. And it continues the MyPillow Premium Pillow special for Mike Lindell. A standard or queen size premium MyPillow, $29.98. You're saving $40. King size pillows only $5 more. 60-day money back guarantee, 10-year warranty, made in the USA. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, use my promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175. And while you're at MyPillow.com, check out all the deep discounts on all the other MyPillow products. MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, use my promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175.
President Biden earlier this week adjusted his goal for vaccinations against COVID in his first 100 days in office. His initial goal of 100 million shots was reached this week, with the president telling reporters on Friday that the U.S. may be able to double that. Dr. Celine Gounder believes that's achievable. The infectious disease expert and epidemiologist tells CNN that vaccination efforts have ramped up to the point that reaching 200 million shots is very possible.
I think that has been shown to be an eminently reachable goal. They've now hit 2 to 3 million shots in arms per day on average. And the fact that we've already hit essentially 100 million doses in arms in the first half of that 100 days, I think we really can do this. 1 in 4 Americans has now received at least one dose of vaccine. 1 in 8 Americans has been fully vaccinated. So, you know, I think that's really a testament to all of the hard work that's been done to dramatically scale up vaccination.
This is USA Radio News.
All right.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, we've got to make haste here, and with regard to the pending Derek Chauvin trial in the case of George Floyd, they've set up a George Floyd plaza. They've taken over half of Minneapolis, and they're threatening violence, and the cops won't even go into the ground that they've declared autonomous. But as Pat Buchanan continues, how does one accurately describe a crowd that gathers outside of a courthouse to demand, on the threat of riot, a verdict of guilty? Well, how would you describe that, Keith Alexander? I mean, I would describe that as a mob. Now, that was what was described of the tourists that went into the Capitol on January the 6th. Yeah, go ahead.
This is a black lynch mob or a black and white lynch mob. This is a lynching, okay? Use another French Revolutionary analogy. This is the storming of the Bastille. This is the rabble outside of the Bastille trying to release the political prisoners, only this time they want the head of the king or somebody like this. And, you know, the French Revolution has a lot of great analogies to this. They had a aristocrat named Philippe something, and they called him Philippe Egalite because he was trying to pander to the revolutionaries and tell them he was one of them. Guess what? His head was chopped off, too. That's what a lot of these white liberals don't realize. There is no racial reconciliation going on here. There is no forgiveness, no amount of repentance. None of that will save you. They do not want to convert you to liberalism. They want to kill you. They want to kill Derek Chauvin. They want to go through a staunch show trial in Hennepin County for that purpose. And they're thinking that they'll have either a cowardly judge or a leftist judge or cowardly jurors or leftist jurors that will give them what they want. And if they don't, the media will be leading the charge against these people. They'll probably be printing their addresses and phone numbers and places of business and employment sites and whatnot. All over, you know, that there's nothing that the left won't do now. And see, this is why we were talking about with our guests earlier about how we all need to be together as whites. I saw a very encouraging sign. I saw Bill Maher speaking common sense.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that.
He basically said that equality of outcome is crazy. He said, why would you tune into the Grammys? The fact that they have Grammys tells you that some people, by merit, do better at making music than others. And then he quoted from a Rolling Stone article that thought that was terrible. He said, this comes from the trophies for all culture of the 1990s, where the little kids, regardless of how inept they might be on the soccer team or the t-ball team or whatever, got trophies. Well, all these kids now think that they should be musicians and should be awarded, all the prizes that go along with being a successful celebrity musician, even though they're a bunch of no-talent bums. Well, when Bill Maher sees the error of the ways of the left, when the left has become too extreme for Bill Maher, I'd say that's a very hopeful sign. We need to just get white people together. We don't have to worry about whether they're Armenian or Croatian, or whether they're liberal or conservative, or even if they're Christian or non-Christian, we need to get together, put our heads together, and fight for common sense. And what we need more than anything is to stop electing these people that will not defend the interests of white people, like Mitch McConnell, like Kevin McCarthy, like Ted Cruz and all these other people, like Nikki Haley, and elect people in the Republican primaries that will answer these false and specious charges against white people generally and white people specifically, like Derek Chauvin, for example.
All right. All right, now, I hate to transition so abruptly, but we only have a couple of minutes left this segment. We've got to get to Rich Hamblin in the next segment, who's going to give us information about a totally different topic. But I do want to touch very quickly, if we can, on this ridiculous situation out of Atlanta where this white guy goes into a couple of Asian-run massage parlors, and he kills the people there. Look, it's tragic. He's going to spend the rest of his life in jail. But the way that the controlled media has tried to pervert this into so-called white supremacy against Asian, stop Asian hate, there's no white on Asian acrimony out there in any tangible form.
There is some, James, but it's black guys attacking elderly, innocent Asian.
Right. Yeah. So any Asian hate, any Asian victimology that can be manifested would be visited upon them by blacks. That's for sure, and that's documented, and that's a fact. That's not debatable. But this whole media they're contorting themselves to try to find a white guy that will fit into the narrative of white guy targets non-white, and so therefore, look, here it is, the white racism we've been warning you about. Well, as you mentioned, Keith, it comes across about as often as Haley's comment. You can count them on one hand, Derek, not Derek Chauvin.
Well, it's like Tom Wolf, flat catchers and the bonfire of the vanities. They're looking for the Dylan great Roof. White defendant. They think they found it with this guy. This is, if we had a serious news media, one that was driven by intelligence and real concern for society, they would be using this to go after pornography addiction. This guy.
That's what motivated this guy. He was sexually frustrated. He was addicted to sex or pornography. It had nothing to do with the race. It just so happened that Asian people predominate in these particular massage parlors. But it had nothing to do with the race or racial animus. But yet here, again, the media contorts this. You can name them on one hand over the course of the last decade or the last generation, even Dylan Roof, the guy in Sweden over there on the island, the guy in Christchurch, New Zealand. I mean, you can name them on a hand. But any time a white person gets out of hand, they try to cram this into the narrative that whites are out to get the other. It's not the case. And in fact, it's the exact opposite case is true. But here, the media has outdone itself in trying to, this guy to be the manifestation of all that is evil about whites.
But see, look at it other side, though, James. When the blacks have somebody that is found to be guilty, they will never stop haranguing us about, his innocence and trying to get him released. Like Jonathan Pollard. Like, remember Leonard Peltier, the Indian that they had back in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Saw all these bumper stickers for decades saying, "Free Leonard Peltier." You had, just think of, look, the Rosenbergs. The Jewish couple that worked for the State Department that stole the nuclear bomb secrets and sold them to the Soviet Union. They were guilty as homemade sin. They were proven that they were guilty when the Venona cables were released after the fall of the Soviet Union. But there are still leftists in America that will swear to you that they were railroaded and they were innocent and pure as driven snow. They do that. On the other hand, they will come after our people, even though the evidence is clear that, for example, Derek Chauvin was not the cause of George Floyd's death. The only way that would happen is if he was just scared and had a heart attack.
Keith, we only have seconds remaining. What do you think is a more perversion of reality, the Derek Chauvin, George Floyd narrative, or the all whites are against Asians, stop Asian hate narrative that the media has put forth? Or is it a tie? I mean, because it's hard to pick.
Well, it's a crazy thing, and basically, it's like the defund the police. They say it's systemic racism if black people are more likely to commit crimes than others, and if you prosecute them, imprison them, arrest them, then that's just more proof of systemic racism. No, it's proof that black people need to get their stuff together, okay? They have to, you know, they used to be able to police themselves. You didn't have this type of crime back in the 50s and the 40s. You started to get it with the rise of the civil rights movement, where everything that black people did or were inclined to do was glorified or justified or excused. And this is what we're doing right now with George Floyd. He's just the latest manifestation. And if people aren't going to be so corrupt and so berserk that they allow, one, him not to be, adjudged guilty of a serious crime, a felony for which he was being arrested, and two, if they don't follow the medical evidence, which proves beyond a reasonable doubt that he was not killed by Officer Chauvin, then that shows that we live in what they have.
Well, I'll tell you. We'll find out sooner or later. We'll find out this year. Keith, love you. We'll see you back in the studio next week. Thanks for being with us tonight.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Remaining. What a great show. What a great month of shows here. This special series, Our March Around the World, and we have been around there, haven't we? I can't even begin to remember, or perhaps I can if I was tasked. Where have we been? England, Scotland, Australia, Croatia, Canada, and still more ports of call to come, Great Britain at large. It's been a special month of programming, so much so, in fact, that we have not really been able to give a just due to stateside news, although Keith and I did our best just here earlier this hour to cram it in. But let's first go back to a little bit more of your correspondence. Rob in Virginia writes, James and Keith, keep up the good fight. Miss you guys and think of you often. Hopefully we'll get to visit again soon. Godspeed. Love you both. Well, Rob, I'll tell you, on behalf of Keith Alexander, we love you. Rob has been one of our conference attendees, and we're all the better for it. Now, we're trying to get a hold of Rich Amblin, so let's just tell Rich to call us. Mr. Producer, can you speak into my ear the number he needs to call? Now, hang on, here it comes. All right, keep going. All right. All right, so this is real-time radio, ladies and gentlemen. I am texting our next guest live in real time as he is waiting for us to call him, and there's been a little miscommunication. It's live radio, and as I told Tom Sudik, there's no mistakes in live radio. Whatever happens in live radio, that's what we meant to present. But in any event, we just gave the studio number. Rich, you're standing by. We're standing by for you, rather. You've got the number. There's the number. We texted it to you. Dave up in I think Dave's in Washington State. James, don't send me any books, but use this money to further stop the rodents in the swamp. How about more conferences? Your conferences are great. I would certainly donate 10 times what this check is worth for those. Finding like-minded people in this mad scandemic world is part of the problem caused by the rodents. Well, Dave, you're not wrong about that. We thank you for the contribution you sent. We'd certainly love 10 times that amount. So I guess we're going to have to put on another conference. I'll tell you, one person who has never missed a TPC conference for as far back as they go, Rich Hamblin. Rich, our good friend in the Nashville area, is with us now. Rich, you've never missed one. How are you tonight, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How you doing?
Well, we're doing okay. We're having a great series. We're marching around the world. You know it. And we have left very little time for pressing affairs of state here stateside. And as you mentioned, and quite rightly so, even I was astonished. You and I talked. This is the damn thing about these phones. I'm trying to do a show. It wants my face ID. Well, I'm not looking at my phone right now, so I have to put in the code. But as you mentioned, the story that you were on with us this segment to bring has dropped off the radar like your car keys off the Mississippi River Bridge. No one is asking the right questions. No one is drawing the right conclusion. We haven't yet covered it. What are we talking about, Rich?
Well, we're talking about the phone calls that Donald Trump made in the latter part of, well, on December 23rd and on January 2nd. The first one was to the chief investigator of the Georgia Election Commission, who works for the Secretary of State. It was appointed by her, a woman named Frances Watson, which was a six-minute conversation. And the other one was a phone call to Brian Kemp and involving several lawyers, which lasted about an hour or so. Anyway, on January 11th, I think it was, the Washington Post broke a story claiming that Trump had called up the chief investigator. They were citing an anonymous source, you know, with wouldn't name who it was, but gave quotes that Trump had could call the investigator and instructed her to find the fraud, quote unquote, and you'll be a hero if you do, quote unquote. Well, lo and behold, that created a furor, and especially in the wake of the January 6th Stop the Steal rally, and it became part of the impeachment case. In fact, Madeleine Dean, I believe, who was one of the House impeachment managers, read it as part of the indictment. It's on like page 10 of the document, and so that was read into the record on the floors of the Hall of Congress. The second conversation was where Trump had instructed, Kemp to find votes and so we can win this election. The second conversation, let me back up a little bit. Georgia is a one-party consent state as far as phone tapping is concerned. In other words, a citizen of the state can record a telephone conversation without the knowledge or permission of the other party. I don't know what Tennessee is, but Georgia's a one-party consent. Washington D.C. I think is two-party. So it depends on where you make the jurisdiction fall. So the first conversation was, I guess it could be legitimately considered, a subject for recording under the law. The second one actually was part of negotiations surrounding the lawsuits that Trump was filing in Georgia. And that is falls under a separate law, which says it's supposed to be held in confidentiality and not to be, made public knowledge until the suits are settled. Well, going back to the first conversation, the Washington Post made that story, used those quotes. It got picked up all over the country and created a firestorm. Like I said, it was read into the impeachment record and just was a real mess. Well, at the same time, around the middle of February, the Fulton County District Attorney, a woman by the name of Fannie Willis, and since Fulton County is a chocolate county, you can imagine what she is, and you can also imagine what she looks like. But she issued a letter to the governor's office, the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, and Lieutenant Governor, requesting all electronic all records of any conversations or any documents that might have anything to do with election fraud. Well, at that time, the original conversation was reported on January 11th, state officials said, "Well, we don't think a recording actually exists of the conversation," which leads you to think, "Well, how did they get the quotes?" Well, as it turns out, in response to the record. For the request for the records, earlier this month, the Wall Street Journal broke the story that an actual copy of the recording was found in the trash bin on the chief investigator's cell phone, Francis Watson. Okay, and they surrendered it because in the letter that Willis sent to the governor's office, it put a reminder in there saying that under Georgia law, any destruction of evidence is a violation of state law. So all of a sudden, lo and behold, this thing pops up. Well, you listen to the transcript, and you see all of a sudden that Trump never said those words. So in other words, the House managers, the Washington Post, read these things, maybe on their part in good faith, put them in the public domain, which were clearly false, but there were two individuals that knew that they weren't for sure, one of which was Francis Watson, and the other was the source of the leak through the Washington Post, who turns out to be a woman named Jordan Fuchs. She goes by Jordy. She's 30 years old. She was a campaign manager for Raffensperger and became Deputy Secretary of State in 2018. She's only 30 years old. I mean, she's young. And so she was quoted in a subsequent story when she was asked about it. It says, "Well, I think, the gist of the story that was related by the Washington Post was correct. Maybe we shouldn't have put it in quotation marks." Well, there's a whole lot of wiggle room in there. And somehow or another, when Watson was interviewed about it and asked, "Why did you record this conversation?" she said, "I was saving it for posterity. It's a once-in-a-lifetime. I would probably never get a call from the President of the United States ever again." Which begs the question, why then did you delete it? So we've got, you know, what's going on here is a major obstruction of justice, you know, destruction of evidence. She thought she deleted the conversation, but she evidently forgot to empty the trash on her cell phone. So that's where it stands now. Now, of course, the Washington Post issued a retraction, kind of mealy mouth. All they did was take away the quotation marks from the remarks that they attributed to Trump, so it wouldn't be a direct quotation. All of the other media followed suit. Nobody really dug in it too far. The one sources I found that have done any kind of investigation on this, I first got alerted to it from True News. But then I started doing some digging this afternoon, and Heavy.com, the Washington Examiner, believe it or not, the Tennessee Star, which has an affiliate called the Georgia Star, has looked into this. But nobody else is. Everybody else is kind of just like, oh well, they misquoted Trump. You know, it's just only the ones that I mentioned by name here actually went so far as to say they falsified the record, which they clearly did. Now the question is this really going to matter? Is anything going to happen? Because the grand jury Willis.
To find out the answer, Rich, we'll have to have you back on next week, but you've whetted the appetite. This, I think, should have been breaking news stories on all of the movement-affiliated outlets, and here we've only begun to scratch the surface, but we will continue. It's been a busy month, but we wanted to shoehorn this one in. For Rich Hamblin, for Keith Alexander, for Tom Sunich, for Jim Dawson, I'm James Edwards. Rich, we've got to have you back next week to give us the rest of the story. This is a big story. We're doing the best we can with the time we've got. Godspeed, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. See you next week when the March Around the World concludes.